This is an Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at Sumo Logic's Illuminate 19 with Dave Frampton, VP of Security Solutions.
Great to be here, Ian. VP of Security Solutions at Sumo just means I direct the development of the product and then the expansion of that product into solutions to make our customers successful in security. And I came into Sumo through an acquisition in late 2017 with some technology to accelerate analyst investigations that we've incorporated into Sumo and built out a good deal more of the Cloud SIEM solution that Sumo has. That's my role.
Yesterday in the press conference, it got a little interesting. Phrases like Cloud SIEM, but actually SOCless were being thrown around. To some degree, they sound counterintuitive. Do you want to elaborate on that?
It's a great point. I do think they both sound and are to some extent counterintuitive, but I think there's some logic underneath a little bit. The SOCless trend that we see is largely built around the idea that as the modern applications are developed in the cloud, the threat surface area and the workflows of investigating potential breaches typically span across things that used to be siloed. You typically need input from the application teams, the IT ops teams, the DevOps teams. They provide essential context without which the security person has a really hard time figuring out where should I set this alert threshold or how can I recreate what happened and where did it spread, which is what those folks are usually trying to do. The idea of SOCless is this idea that we're not going to have three or four dedicated security people in a fishbowl isolated from everyone else who are our security team. Instead, we're going to have a little bit of a virtual community of people that collaborate in order to execute these workflows.
Will they come from a cloud security provider or the cloud owner as well as on-premise? What's the makeup of that team?
I think there'll be many mix and match models. The dominant model will be you'll need context from your own enterprise. Because remember, in the cloud provider is handling a lot of the security for the underlying infrastructure, but you're really worried about the security of what's sitting on top of it, which is you know what that is. You know how to interpret, for example, what's in the logs of that. You're typically talking about DevOps person, an apps person, an IT ops person, and a security person from the same company whose assets are hosted in the cloud. But to your earlier question, how is that contradictory with maybe the idea of a cloud SIEM? SIEM at its heart is let's have a central clearinghouse for all of the data and all of the alerts so we can apply some 360-degree view and context to figure out what we should pay attention to in all of that because we don't have the capacity to pay attention to all of it. So where Cloud SIEM still makes sense as a concept is, yes, we do need one analytics platform and one clearinghouse for context where all of this logic can be applied and we can surface things that we need to pay attention to. But that doesn't mean necessarily that we're only going to have a small number of people in a rigidly defined SOC that are going to participate in those processes. We're going to have this sort of more horizontal model where you have people in all these different groups, potentially not even physically co-located together and maybe not even organizationally affiliated, maybe not even meeting regularly as a cohesive team. Maybe as workflows are identified, they can find the people with the context and the expertise to solve them. There's a lot of these SOCless environments which have not a collected alert inbox where everything gets into one list and the task is like to go down the punch list and how many highs did you knock off today and that defines success. It's more the highest priority incidents that need to be investigated. They go out on pre-routed Slack channels as an example or through a tool like PagerDuty to the assets that are most likely to be able to help contribute to the solutions to the problems. There's a way that Cloud SIEM can exist and SOCless can exist. In fact, Genesis was on stage at Illuminate here at the show talking about using Sumo as that horizontal bridge between these different teams as a Cloud SIEM, but not as a siloed security tool.
But how far into the business side of the enterprise do you drive this? Because what you're describing now is not an unfamiliar model to anybody who's using a managed security services provider who are running a set of SOC services at a higher level where they're looking at your cloud, they're looking at your on-premise, you've maybe got two or three people in-house teams, and what they'll do is they'll find something, look at it, and fire back to you some actionable intelligence. So you can actually do something with it as opposed to 2-3 years ago where they just give you a whole list of things to deal with. But that doesn't seem to go far enough for what you're describing when you talk about finding that internal skills. Where does that begin to impact on the rest of the business and outside of the security function?
there's maybe two dimensions to that question. The first one is on the role of the MSSPs in helping organizations who can't scale to the complete defense. I would almost turn that one on its head and say that's one of the biggest gaps in the MSSP offers and even the EDR and MDR vendors today, is that they typically have grown up in this security siloed view. So the skill sets that they have as they're looking at your data, potentially remote and in the cloud, they're really looking at it from a purely security standpoint, and they don't have the context, you know, the DevOps perspective, the IT ops perspective. They don't maybe have some of that knowledge of the application. And this is an area where the MSSPs and other security outsources are really going to have to evolve, because their models aren't really well adapted to the cloud. The other part of what you ask, I think, is really insightful, that the lines of business are getting much more involved in this process, because as the cloud migrations have occurred, production security, in other words, security for applications that face the internet, whether for customers, for partners, other communities, they become a big part of the threat surface area. But the owners of those applications oftentimes are the lines of business. They're not necessarily the IT shop. They actually become a third point on this triangle that you have to connect the dots around. They have important context. They may have critical information, for example, about individual customers, customer history, customer revenue, customer compliance requirements. That context may be housed in line of business systems or in personnel that resides in those lines of business. It may be critical to actually understanding the full context of a potential security incident that's underway. It's a great point. There's this sort of third triangle here that we missed in that first pass, and we do see that trend, particularly with those customers that have digitized the majority of their business. And those we see as most progressive in terms of lines of business saying, hey, if this is how we're going to deliver our product, we're not going to have the IT shop owning these apps anymore. We're going to be the custodian and owners of those applications.
But how do we then get them connected in this system? One of the reasons, as you just said there, one of the reasons they've gone out and done this is they don't want IT owning this. They've lost trust in IT. They're tired of the old IT moaning about how long it's going to take and cost. So they've gone out, they found themselves a SaaS app, and they're pouring stuff into it. IT has no visibility. How do we link that through to security? Because if IT has no visibility, ITSec has no visibility. But somehow that business unit has to be persuaded to engage with them both to make this better.
There's two pieces of it. One is the SaaS app proliferation that you talked about that is oftentimes centered in the line of business, just as you say. There's a rapid evolution in the need to have the logging and telemetry from those SaaS apps assimilated with all the rest of the contextual data of the enterprise. So there's one part of this, which is you have to get the data. Now, that's easier with some than others. Obviously, there are some of the SaaS players have a little bit of leverage in how open and flexible they are in that. I don't want to dismiss that problem. It's a tough problem. But even once you get the data all together, then the trick is you need a tool with a low barrier to entry to let people interact with data, gain insight from it, and visualize it. And Sumo Logic, that's what we're trying to do, is provide that tool, which it gives you the power of the deep analytics and deep search and all of that, but it's accessible enough that a line of business user that may not be an IT expert for years and years can very quickly create a unique way to visualize data that's contextually relevant to him or herself, easy for them to set up on their own, not file a ticket with some central group in IT. You just have this visual of, instead of, you know, 10 deep users for an old SIM, imagine the democratized model where there may still be 5 deep users, but there might be 50 medium depth users, and there might be 300 or 400 users, potentially even 1,000 users in some of our customers, who know the tool just enough to be able to quickly glean insight from data that's not just in their silo, but in the silos adjacent to them, whether it's in line of business or spanning across IT, or in some cases security. You'd be a little careful about access there.
Not for the first time in the last couple of days, I'm going to ask this question. Once we start to democratize this, once we start to say you have access to it, there become some other problems that jump to us. First of all, we're trying to democratize data per se across the enterprise, and end user departments are struggling to cope with all the tools to investigate and pick their way through this huge ocean of disconnected data that they're told holds the key to the future of the company. When we throw security data into that, and you use the word context, we have an even bigger problem, because these people might understand business data, but how would they begin to understand that, oh, that's a security thing that I need to deal with? So how do they add that context in order to file that ticket? In addition, one of the things we've seen with AI is we've seen poisoning. We've seen it with DNS, we're seeing it with AI, where if an attacker can gain entrance into the business, and if he sees this is what we're doing, they can implant deliberately false or misleading data into that data lake. How do you fix those? Because all three of those are critical to making this work.
No easy fixes to any of the three. If your environment's compromised to the extent that someone can ingest large amounts of false data, almost say you have bigger problems than the false data that they're going to inject in your data, because they'll have direct access to everything that you value. That almost falls back to just the overall efficacy of your defense. There's some specific things that you can do to put in place data integrity procedures to check through your various sources, some hygiene. You can put together some filtering, some audits, some checksumming, a variety of sorts to see if your data has been polluted. But I would say your first order of business is you better set up a defense so that that doesn't happen, because if they're all the way under all of your defense and in your data lake, you're in deep trouble. To your question about how do people understand context mixed in where they understand some context but they don't understand others, this is where Sumo plays a role in providing the neutral fabric that lets you look at data in normalized formats and in visual formats that are easier to understand for people who aren't domain experts. What's an example of all this? What do I mean? Interpreting a log is something that most people in their own silo come to be able to do over a period of time. Now, a little less so in the line of business, fine, but in the IT end of it, DevOps and apps and everything, pretty soon people like to even recognize, and they almost even skip a lot of the summarization that's provided by tools and actually look at these logs directly to glean not only obvious insight, but subtle insight that you can glean from looking all the way down at the raw logs. But when you sort of lens out and you present them with a log format from another context that they don't understand, that's when they need some sort of an abstraction of that. So they can extract just the meaning of that instead of getting lost in all the noise of the raw logs and the volume of all of that. The trick is to try to provide visualization and normalization so that you can present data in a way that can get the benefits of comparing things which are not exactly the same, slightly different and in the same category. I'm interested in apples, oranges, and bananas as categories of fruit. I'm not so interested in mixing together battle axes and plum. This is where having a platform that stitches together across all of these tools is really essential, because if you don't, you have to write custom software or scripts or try to abstract it all the way up to some very high-level visualization layer to be able to compare these things which are similar, figure out how to categorize them, figure out what analytical insights you can get from them. This is where an intelligence platform and an analytics platform that can be the neutral Switzerland in the middle and provide you that substrate for that collaboration is really critical. And in a sense, this is what Sumo Logic is all about.
But how much can you leave that to users to do? In order for the user to know that they're looking for apples, oranges, and bananas and not battle axes and plums, they need to understand what apples, oranges, and bananas are. In a security context, they don't. This is not their field of expertise. They are not subject matter experts here. If we're going to democratize this data to that degree, where we're going to remove all silos, there's a gap of knowledge and skills here.
You're onto something I think is really critical, which is this, maybe summarized by the old adage, when everyone owns something, no one does. It's a similar type dynamic. I think you're right. There's a really important distinction. As we democratize it and you're dependent on this collaboration that goes across all these boundaries, which sounds nice, there needs to be a conductor for the orchestra from a security perspective. And this loops us back all the way to your original question about this idea of, wait, it's SOC-less, but we still have Cloud SIEM. It doesn't mean you dissolve security, because somebody has to conduct and orchestrate and say, look, in the big picture, I understand the life cycles of a breach, and I understand the bigger picture of what's likely to happen, but I may just be missing specific context. So in order to understand key elements that are important to diagnosing whether or not we've been breached or not, I may need to facilitate collaboration between groups A, C, and D. I don't need B for this one. So we'll, through the platform, orchestrate that collaboration, route the alert type thing. But then that all still comes into somebody who has to have the big picture of how all this fits together. I completely agree. I see great difficulty in large-scale federation of defense for any except the largest and most sophisticated practitioners. It can be done, and it is done in the very largest enterprises and in sort of nation state scale. This happens, but for the normal enterprise, managing all of the communication and syncing that needs to happen, if you're not going to have one big clearinghouse command center A command center doesn't have to be physical. It doesn't have to be staffed by people that work for you, as you point out. And all, but somebody needs to keep that coordinating role, even as all this collaboration happens to collect all the information that you need and solve little sub-pieces of the puzzle.
So where do you extend the platform to deal with this? Machine learning offers up an opportunity to create that subject matter expert that can pull this data together and understand what battle axes and plums really are compared to apples, oranges and bananas. It can refine the data because it's running at the speed of machine. It also suggests there's a secondary and a monetizable option here. You've produced a continuous intelligence report which has used anonymized data from customers. If you have a platform that can begin to detect things by sector, so for example, one customer may see an attack and they're in manufacturing, it's not a huge jump for the machine learning system to actually identify that and suggest a rule that could be pushed to all customers in manufacturing. Where does that extension fit within your roadmap?
Two great points. So on the first one, on machine learning having the capacity to develop skills, that's certainly true in the sense of educating someone about how other pieces of context can cluster together in a correlated way to be relevant to something they're interested in. I absolutely agree and think that's true. I do think we need to be a little bit careful. Sometimes, depending on how you interpret the word skills, machine learning almost bypasses the human development of intuition around defining those clusters. There's a subtlety there. It's maybe an interesting side chart, side path to go down. But to your point about the monetizable, maybe for the purposes of the audience who wasn't at Illuminate here, who might be listening to this, Sumo has taken a step forward with something we call the Global Intelligence Service to look at all of the data and patterns across our customers. And in our multi-tenant architecture, we can look at this data, abstract it so it's anonymous, so you're not betraying any privacy here, find patterns in that data that can be used for benchmarking, can be used to score your environment relative to others, and as you pointed out with the continuous intelligence report, also give you really interesting macro trends that might be useful to you in planning your own environment or establishing KPIs. Your question was, hey, could you take that to the next level, which is, okay, that's great, but then could you suggest, based on that learning, based on my benchmark compare or my anomaly score, here's a set of maybe correlation rules that you might want to consider in your environment. I think two things about that. I think that's absolutely a fascinating application of this technology because people want to automate as much of this as possible so that they don't have to go through these discovery processes, like translate, okay, here I got my score and here I got my compare to Joey and Bobby and Susie, but then, okay, what do I do with that? It's a fantastic next step of this. Our experience and what we are trying to do is build content ahead of time so that customers don't have to develop their own correlation logic in terms of prioritizing what's important to them in their defense. And this is something that is currently in beta trials now, and your audience can expect to see a lot of that next year. Informing that with the signal from the global intelligence, that's a fascinating use case, and one I think we for sure will do with certain areas early. For example, Amazon Guard Duty, which is one of the early signals that we're calibrating and benchmarking, that absolutely will be tied into the early developments of this out-of-the-box content that people can then say, hey, given this signal, then I map it to that out-of-the-box content, then I can automatically deploy that. Not taking the human out of the loop, there's some human judgment, but that's still the workflow. And I think from there, it's a rich use case area. I completely agree with that.
The reason I think it works is because comparing benchmarks and rating yourself against somebody else is generally a passive approach. Starting to look at what we could do better is reactive. We're waiting till it's gone wrong. But if you're seeing it in one customer in one sector, to be able to extract that and provide that back to people is a proactive move. It gives them a richer set of rules that they can work with, that they can build from.
I think it's absolutely right. Customers are hungry. I want to spend most of my time, since it's so scarce, on the highest value judgment I can apply. As a result, I want all of these sub-steps, I want to automate them as much as I can, as much as I can get from my tool, or maybe my tool working with the other data pulled together, I want to do all that. And then spend my energy saying, okay, given that suggestion, do I want to accept it, yes or no? Do I want to tune it? That last final tuning is the critical step in most of these things, because if you don't tune it just right, things like correlation rules, they overfire or they underfire. So if I can spend most of my time on that really hard problem and not have to spend half of my time on all the steps before it, then I'm able to get ahead of the game in the defense. I think that's a great point.
Talking of time, we're at the end of the conference. It's bar o'clock. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you, Ian. Great to be here.